You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Coe, joined by my co-host Patrick Fitzgerald. In this episode, we are going to go over our regular season awards. Now, these are not your normal baseball awards. These are related to fantasy baseball, so we do care about wins when we talk about best pitchers. But before we get into the little ceremony, Patrick, how are you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing pretty well, enjoying the playoff baseball. Looking forward to watching Yankees-Sox Game 3 after we finish this up. And yeah, fantasy season ended decently, I'd say. I ended up finishing second in my OC and just inside the overall cash spot, so 27th. So nice. I was like right inside the top 1%, which was a really cool finish. It wasn't the highest I'd been all year, but I was pretty happy with the results. So yeah, it was a cool season. I had a really good team, so that was fun. How are you?
Nice. Yeah, I'm doing all right. The Twins fired their manager, so the first in a long line of dominoes I expect for that team this offseason. Playoff baseball has been pretty fun to follow. The Sox-Yankees game is funny in that they've got two rookie pitchers that they're resting all their hopes on in Game 3, winner-take-all, so that's exciting. Yeah, my fantasy season didn't go as hot as I was hoping it to, but nonetheless still had fun. I finished a ninth in my Dynasty League for the second year in a row, and I guess the funny thing about ninth is that they have the worst. We do a lottery for the first pick in the first-year player draft. Last year I was ninth, and I finished first in the lottery, so I got to pick Roki Sasaki, which we all know how that turned out. I also this year finished ninth, and I'm gonna have the worst odds again in the lottery, so here's the hoping I somehow luck into the number one pick again. But other than that, Dynasty has been okay. I was first, and then I dropped all the way to ninth over the course of a couple agonizing months, as pretty much all my players either succumbed to injury or realized that they weren't very good at baseball.
Well, that's the thing about Dynasty, right? It never stops. There's not really an offseason, is there?
Exactly. Yeah, now I get to make some fun decisions about, am I going to keep some aging veterans or am I just going to blow it all up and try to get some young guns onto the team?
Maybe you'll get another good pick. Maybe the odds will be in your favor again.
Exactly. I'm going to need a brush up on my 2025 draft class to really know who are the people to target in that draft next year. Well, before we get into the rest of the episode, just a reminder, you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. Send us your fantasy baseball questions at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Wherever you listen, make sure you follow us and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. All right, like I mentioned, we are going to be doing some fantasy baseball awards, 5 categories, basically best hitter, best pitcher, best reliever, best late round pick, the biggest non-injury disappointment from the season, and then in a personal one, the best or worst fantasy move that we both made this year. So a lot of fun categories here, and I guess we should preface best fantasy pitcher is kind of more related to starters, and then we're going to obviously talk about relievers. But yeah, starting with best hitter, I think the top three that we got here is pretty obvious. Aaron Judge, Kyle Raleigh, and Shohei Ohtani, I think all three of them could easily be front runners for this award. But Patrick, in your opinion, who this season was the best hitter in terms of fantasy results?
Yeah, I think it would have to be Judge just because of the power, right? The power and average combo is kind of unprecedented, honestly. He led the league in batting average by a wide margin and popped over 50 homers. And obviously, with Raleigh, you got crazy power. With Ohtani, you get great power speed, while Judge just kind of chips in with the speed. But I think the overall profile just makes it has to be Aaron Judge. I mean, 331 average, career high, career low strikeout rate. He missed a couple games, right, with the arm injury. But other than that, I mean, he was just an absolute anchor for your team, contributing across the board. 250 combined runs and RBIs to go with that excellent batting average. So I think it's got to be Judge for me.
Yeah, as much as I want to say it's Kyle Raleigh doing it from the catcher spot, and it is kind of impressive that he's, you know, able to do that at a, you know, pretty low, a pretty high ADP, I should say. I guess low ADP, technically. But the average there is just the thing that kind of maybe swings me towards Judge. 331 versus 247. That's just a really big difference. And Shohei, I mean, Shohei had a great year as well. But I think having only 20 stolen bases is maybe what maybe puts Judge a little over him. Because Judge had 12, right? So it's not like he had no stolen bases. He still was kind of chipping in that category. You know, Shohei maybe chipped in a little bit more. But, you know, is that going to make up for the fact that his average is 50 points lower than Judge? You know, his even though he had 9 more runs, he had 13 fewer RBI. I don't know. It's kind of an interesting conversation. I think Judge is just a complete package. And I think that's what probably puts him as the number one guy for me as well.
Yeah, I think if you want to have a conversation about best value relative to ADP, that's where Raleigh enters the conversation, really has a good argument. But I think if you're just straight up going best hitter, I think Judge is kind of the clear choice here. You know, it's hard to say that he's going to be selected number one next year just because it's a hard to bet on that kind of average year in and year out. And it feels like maybe Ohtani has the quote unquote safer profile. But in terms of just this year, I think Judge has to be the guy.
Yeah. It is surprising, though, out of these three that he has the fewest homers. And yet, you know, we're kind of talking about how he's got the ultimate power average combo. But yeah, it is kind of weird to see that Judge is not leading the league in homers. It's kind of it's surprising that that's happening, and yet we are kind of saying he's the best hitter.
Yeah, he didn't quite get to the same heights as the other guys, but I think if you're picking who you think is going to have the most home runs next year, it feels hard to bet against Judge.
Yeah. In terms of some honorable mentions, Juan Soto, clearly really solid player this year, 715 plate appearances, 263 average, 120 runs, 43 homers, 105 RBI, and 38 stolen bases. We talked about Soto a couple weeks ago, how he was basically sacrificing ratios for more power. The speed was kind of a nice thing that he's kind of discovered this season. Unfortunately, the Mets go to Mets. It wasn't enough to get them into the playoffs, but nonetheless, a really good season for Juan Soto for his first season in Queens.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. It didn't take the shape you expected, right, with the steals being so high and the batting average being a little bit worse, but all categories contributor and definitely making a case to be in the top five conversation next year.
Yeah. Jose Ramirez with another 30-40 season this year, 30 homers, 44 stolen bases, chipped in with a 283 average, 103 runs and 85 RBI. The 85 RBI is probably the thing that just holds Ramirez back from being really a top three guy. Otherwise, all those other numbers are pretty solid, right? He's obviously not getting to 50 homers, but the sheer number of steals that he has is pretty impressive. It's just that this is a really unfortunate Guardians team that just cannot get on base for him to bat them in, and yet they still finish as the AL Central champions this year.
Somehow they do it. Wasn't enough to get them through this playoff series, but they just find a way, you know, and J-Ram's obviously a huge part of that. You hope they can build around him a little better next year, but I don't know. I guess the offense has nowhere to go but up, but I'd really like to see them make some additions before I have any more confidence in it.
Yeah, I'm skeptical that they're going to make any progress in the offensive department because it's the Guardians and they don't like spending money. And then Kyle Schwarber, just a great year from him, 56 homers, 132 RBI, all for the DH position. So finished with more homers and more RBI than Shohei Ohtani. So there's probably not an argument that he's the better util only guy just because of Ohtani's contributions everywhere else across the board. But nonetheless, just an incredible year from Schwarber.
Yep, going to be super interesting to see where he signs. And obviously it'll be fun to watch him for the Phillies in the playoffs. I don't think anybody earned themselves more money this year than maybe Kyle Schwarber. I mean, he just had an absolutely insane contract year.
Yeah, really solid for him. I do kind of hope the Phillies just re-sign him because that's gonna be a good team. It's gonna be very interesting to see where him and Kyle Tucker both end up this offseason. All right, moving on to best fantasy pitcher, best starter. The top three was pretty clear. Garrett Crochet, 205 innings, 18 wins, 255 strikeouts with a 2.59 ERA and a 1.03 WHIP. He had 22 out of 32 quality starts. Tarik Skubal, 195 innings, 13 wins, 241 strikeouts, 2.21 ERA and a 0.89 WHIP, 21 out of 31 quality starts. And then finally, Paul Skenes, 187 innings pitched, Only 10 wins, one fewer than last year, actually, which I thought was kind of surprising. 216 strikeouts, a 1.96 ERA, and a 0.96 whip. He had 20 out of 32 quality starts. So out of those three guys, Patrick, who do you have as your kind of number one pitcher?
It's close, honestly. I thought at first that I'd be like 100% Skubal, but honestly, Crochet with the few more innings, right? And he obviously had a lot of wins. Not that, you know, that's necessarily in his control, but 5 more wins, 15 more strikeouts, 10 more innings. And the ratios are slightly worse though, right? I think I still lean Skubal by a hair, but honestly, it depends. Like different player raters have Crochet ahead and some have Skubal ahead. I think that those ratios from Skubal are just like so immaculate that just offers a great ace profile. Obviously, Crochet's ratios are great too, but Skubal's are kind of, they're almost Skeens level, but with a little more volume, more strikeouts, and more wins. So I think that he gets the slight edge from me, but I mean, not by a lot. Crochet just really had an incredible breakout season.
Yeah, I thought Skubal was going to run away with this as well. And then I was putting together the stats and I was like, Crochet had like a really good year. 15 more wins is, or not, sorry, 5 more wins is not nothing. And 14 more strikeouts also is not nothing, right? And having 205 innings, like that's really impressive. You know, it kind of just feels like he just was going deeper into games, which I know, you know, most players don't have innings pitch as a category, but in my home league, it is one. So kind of makes Crochet pretty valuable as well. And you know, the ratios are maybe the one thing, right? 2.59 ERA and a 1.03 whip. And you know, we just kind of talked about how Judge was just so much better in the average department. You know, that kind of gives a lot of credence for why he should be the number one guy. And so maybe that's kind of why, you know, we're kind of willing to give Skubal the better numbers just because of how good his ratios are compared to Crochet. I think I want to lean Crochet here, though. I think the counting stats alone to me are really impressive. 18 wins and 255 strikeouts. And I think the part that made it a little impressive for me was that he's a lefty playing in Boston. Like, you know, maybe that means that he is able to limit some of the homer damage. But, you know, we all know how well righties do in Boston because of the Green Monster there. And the fact that he's able to kind of limit some of this damage as a lefty, I think, is really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, even the biggest Crochet fans obviously weren't expecting this. And your point about the volume and the wins is definitely relevant. I mean, I was listening to the CBS Fantasy Baseball Today podcast earlier, and they were talking about Crochet was only one of three guys who threw over 200 innings this year. There was only 7 pitchers who had 15 or more wins this season, which was way fewer than I was expecting. So, you know, people who play in wins leagues, you know how much of a premium those are at. And for someone to get not just over 15, but up to 18, that makes a huge difference over the course of the season.
Yeah, the other two pitchers with over 200 innings, Logan Webb, always the Iron Man at 207,
yeah.
And then Christopher Sanchez at 203, which is really impressive. For someone who wasn't a complete nobody, but I don't think anyone was expecting Chris Sanchez to have this kind of year as well.
No.
So, all right. So you've got Skubal, and then I've got Crochet for the best pitcher in yep. fantasy this year. Some honorable mentions. Nathan Eovaldi was absolutely crushing the ratios leaderboard. Got a 1.73 ERA, a 0.85 whip. Unfortunately, he dealt with injury in the middle of the season, so only pitched 130 innings. Had 11 wins, which is kind of impressive for kind of how poor that Rangers team was this year. 129 strikeouts as well. So, yeah, solid year from Eovaldi. I think he was definitely one of the best pitchers in baseball, by probably in the top 3 conversation until he got hurt. And then once he got hurt, it just all the other guys were able to pass him.
Yeah, it's you know, you expected a little bit more volume from him, but he is a guy who does get banged up. He hasn't made over 30 starts since 2021. So I think at this point you do unfortunately have to pencil him in for at least like 5 missed starts, but you just hope that the ratios are solid. And obviously this was a, you know, a great luck season, but also a great skill season. He was just pounding the zone. I think career low walk rate, like 4%. So yeah, it was super impressive.
And his fastball was pretty much holding steady the entire season until he got hurt, which I think is the impressive part, because that's the one thing we always watch with Eovaldi. Is where it says velocity at, you know, once it starts dipping in 92, that's when you get a little scared, but it was pretty consistent throughout the year until he got hurt. Another guy who kind of stepped into his own this season, Brian Wu, 186.2 innings, 15 wins, 198 strikeouts, 2.94 ERA, a .93 WHIP, and 21 quality starts, kind of cementing his status as, you know, an ace level pitcher, you know, possibly in that top five conversation. Yoshinobu Yamamoto is like another one of those guys who's knocking on the door there. But yeah, great season from Brian Wu. Really held that Seattle team together when they were dealing with injuries with pretty much the rest of their rotation. And Wu obviously kind of has that reputation of being a little bit of a glass arm, but the fact that he was able to get to 186 innings this season was pretty impressive.
Yep. As has been talked about in so many fantasy podcasts this year, the guy who we had so many volume questions about became one of the most reliable, you know, quality start sources. So there's only so much, you know, so much we can get right, even no matter how much we study and learn about these guys. So we had a great year. And I have to give, of course, a shout out to Trevor Rogers, the Oriole. He was kind of like Eovaldi this year in terms of not a lot of innings, but insane ratios. I think he threw about 110 innings and the ratios were very similar to Eovaldi's. Would have been even better, but he did get lit up by the Yankees in the last start of the year. But yeah, probably the waiver wire out of the year for a lot of managers who had him.
Yeah, if you had Nathan Eovaldi to start the season, and then when he went down, you picked up Trevor Rogers, like that would be just the ultimate combo right there.
A lot of profit there.
Yeah, exactly. all right, let's move on to best reliever. And we've got a couple different choices in terms of reliever here. So I'll just walk through the three of them that we both thought maybe had a shot at being the number one guy. And then, you know, we can talk about who we picked there. So John Duran, you know, I know him very well. Unfortunately, he is no longer with the Twins, which sucks a lot. 70 innings, 80 strikeouts, 7 wins, 32 saves, 2.06 ERA, and a 1.10 WHIP, season split between Minnesota and Philadelphia. Andres Munoz, 62.1 innings, 38 saves, he had 7 blown on the season, a 1.73 ERA, a 1.03 WHIP, and 83 strikeouts. And Aroldis Chapman, the guy continues to amaze us, 61.1 innings, 32 saves, only had 2 blown this year, 1.17 ERA, a 0.7 WHIP, and 85 strikeouts. So, yeah, Patrick, who do you got for the best reliever of the year?
Yeah, I think it's got to be Chapman, honestly. I don't see an argument for – I mean, obviously, all these guys had fantastic seasons, but I think he's got to be the choice. The saves, like you said, it wasn't like an insane amount of saves. Where I think Carlos Estevez led the league somehow with 42, but 32 is a great total. The ratios were just insane. I mean, like almost a sub one ERA and a 0.7 WHIP. Plus, you know, he's going to give you a ton of strikeouts because these are all just Chapman. And yeah, I mean, he was just incredible across the board. He even chipped in 5 wins for you. So I think that he's definitely my choice here. It's been a quite an impressive career, you know, resurgence. Maybe he'll be big for the Red Sox down the stretch here in the postseason too.
Yeah, Munoz had a good year at 38 saves. But I mean, the 7 blown kind of speaks to a little bit of the wildness that he had this year. And obviously he had that fun start to spring training where everyone was getting excited about this kick change that he had, where it's just like, this pitch is nasty and gross. And, you know, he used it to his benefit, still had pretty low ratios, 1.73 ERA and a 1.03 WHIP, good number of strikeouts at 83. And Duran having switched teams in the middle of the season, that obviously helped him getting a little bit more save opportunities. That being said, it took him a while, I think, to kind of get comfortable in Philly. I know there was a couple instances where people were wondering, like, really, is this our closer? But the ratios probably are what hurt him the most, 2.06 ERA and a 1.1 WHIP, despite having pretty much, you know, similar number of strikeouts and saves. But ultimately, I agree with you. It's got to be Aroldis. I think just I'm kind of bummed because I think I dropped him from my dynasty team last season. Over the offseason, because like I don't think this guy has anything more to give, and then he just goes out and has I don't know if I'd call it a career year, but definitely like a great year with the Red Sox. Quite impressive considering that there was actually a lot of question marks about whether he was going to you know, kind of be the closer in Boston, right? Like they had signed Liam Hendricks. I think Justin Slayton was getting a lot of hype at the beginning of the year as well, and Aroldis just took that role and ran with it for the entire season. 85 strikeouts is just, yeah, really impressive with those ratios that he had as well.
Right. I mean, he's a guy who's been in the league forever. We thought we knew what he was, right? He's a guy who can still get you probably 20 saves, but he's going to walk some guys and he's probably going to hurt your WHIP in the process. And then this year, he just completely flipped the switch. So, you know, obviously it's a drop where you tear your hair out in hindsight, but I think that the thought process, you know, was there. I mean, nobody really expected this kind of, you know, resurgent season. So it's going to be interesting to see where the market settles next year. I think that Edwin Diaz is probably going to be the number one closer off the board. He was awesome this year. He just didn't get a lot of opportunities down the stretch as the Mets just really floundered. But I think he'll be first, and I don't imagine that, like, Munoz and Chapman, maybe Duran, I don't think they'll be too far behind him.
Yeah, and I guess the funny thing about Chapman is I didn't realize he's 37 years old. You know, like, he exactly. is, like, fully in the twilight of his career, and yet he goes out and puts the season out there. But, yeah, in terms of honorable mentions, I mean, Edwin Diaz, for sure, 66 innings. He had 28 saves on the season, which kind of speaks to just how unfortunate this Mets team was. 1.60 ERA, 0.87 WHIP, led all relievers with 98 strikeouts, which is just crazy. Like, that's an insane number for any sort of reliever to have. And then Robert Suarez, 69.2 innings. He had 40 saves, 50 blown, 2.97 ERA, a 0.9 WHIP, 75 strikeouts. I guess impressive for him was that he had a mid-season trade. Mason Miller joins his team. And the Padres were like, nope, Robert Suarez is our closer. I know we just got the guy who's got the most electric stuff, but we're going to stick with Suarez as a closer. And Mason Miller, you're more of our fireman, eighth-inning role. And that's going to be a very interesting battle to look at in spring training if, you know, they're going to stick with Suarez next year or if Mason Miller is going to take over that role. Or if they switch Mason Miller to the rotation. That's the other interesting.
Yeah, it looks like Suarez has an opt-out in his deal. Maybe he'll take that and go somewhere else. But if not, I mean, that's going to be a great two-headed monster. Maybe they'll turn Miller into a starter. I mean, the possibilities seem really endless there.
Yeah. But yeah, great year from Suarez. Just really reliable. And, I mean, the knock against him is just always going to be the ERA. That's just never been good compared to every other reliever. And that's probably what hurts him from being, you know, one of those top three guys. But regardless, just really good year from him.
Right, he had that stretch. I'm looking at it right now in the game logs where he had a zero ERA. It looks like until April 27th. So he had, like, what is that, 11 scoreless outings to start the year. And it's like, okay, maybe he's just going to be insane. And then he did give up a run, but then it was six more scoreless outings. Then he gives up 5 earned runs on May 12th. So all the regression just kind of hit him at once.
Yeah, which, I mean, hey, that's not bad. If you get to avoid, you know, those random just one-run games, it's just like, oh, we'll just get it all out in 5 runs in one game.
Yeah, I guess it just depends, right? If it's a weekly or whatever, you know, that might have lost your week. But if it's a roto, you know, you don't really care. You just kind of take it as it comes.
Exactly, yeah. All right, we are going to move on to the best late-round pick. So we kind of set this arbitrarily as, you know, an ADP greater than 200. So just kind of an arbitrary number there, but, we both kind of went with 3 different guys here. So yeah, Patrick, who do you have as kind of your top guys under pick 200?
Sure. So mine is a very tight range of right after 200. I know your guys are going to get a little deeper, but this pocket right here, I used, RotoWire OC ADP. So keep in mind, these are no IL leagues. So that does matter in terms of drafting injured guys, which one of these guys was. But first one's Nathan Eovaldi, who we just talked about a few minutes ago, obviously emerged as an ace from this 204 ADP. I think he's always kind of in like the 175 to 225 range and seemingly, seemed to be just kind of a solid middle rotation arm and then obviously broke out this year. And then pick 206, Byron Buxton, obviously outfielder for the Twins. 542 plate appearances, which by his standards is a full season, 264, 327, 551 slash 97 runs, 35 homers, 83 RBIs, 24 steals. So just an insane season for Buxton, you know, showing the promise that we hoped we'd see from him, you know, as a top prospect who's just struggled to stay on the field a little bit. And then this was one of the best injury discounts in the, you know, the NFBC type leagues, and that's Zach Neto, shortstop for the Angels. He was right behind Buxton, ADP 207. So like I said, great range. Neto's season was cut short at the end by injury, but in between the injuries, it was 554 plate appearances of a 257, 319, 474 slash, 82 runs, 26 homers, 62 RBIs, and 26 steals. So he was threatening 30-30 if it wasn't for the injuries, and the other categories were just kind of decent. But yeah, he's really emerging as a power speed stud at the loaded shortstop position. So those are the 3 guys, you know, right after 200, obviously, but just outside that group that definitely broke through this season.
Yeah, I'm kind of annoyed that I didn't list Buxton in my top three players. I definitely should have. Great year for him. Just a couple stolen bases shy of a 30 of the Twins' first 30-30 season. But yeah, great year. 542 plate appearances is insane. I can't believe he got to that amount. He's probably going to, be a top 10 MVP finish or something like that, which is going to net him more money, which is impressive. The 83 RBI is just a really annoying thing because the Twins are awful and no one got on base before him. So I think he was also batting leadoff for a good chunk of the season as well. So I wish there was more counting stats with him, but yeah, an incredible year from him. And Zach Neto for sure. I think, we probably had this conversation a bunch of times already, but feels like he is very much knocking on that top five shortstop door right now, right? Like being in the conversation with Bobby Witt, Lindor, Seager's still maybe in that conversation a little bit.
Yeah, you got Gunnar and Ellie. Maybe Bo Bichette will get up there, but probably not quite that high.
Right, yeah. But regardless, like he is fully in that conversation of like, does this guy deserve to be one of the, top five shortstops drafted? Like, is he, going to be a top three round sort of guy? And yeah, I think Neto is, he's still young too, which is kind of incredible. Like he could very easily have his first 30-30 season next year, assuming everything works out for him health-wise.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, well, my guys, I had George Springer with an ADP of 243, and mine is based on NFBC, which is what FanGraphs has. But Springer had 140 games, a 309 average, 106 runs, 84 RBI, 32 homers, and 18 stolen bases. Just the absolute definition of a comeback year for Springer after some pretty tough years in Toronto. Yeah, this is just a really impressive showing from him. Essentially, like a top 30 hitter performance from Springer. So he really turned it around. We've talked about him a bunch of times on the podcast already. So yeah, really great season from him. Geraldo Perdomo, which I don't think we actually talked about a lot. He had an ADP of 430. He finished a ninth among shortstops in homers. He had 20, fourth in runs at 98 runs. He was first in RBI, which is kind of impressive. Had 100, ninth in steals at 27, which kind of speaks to just how many steals most shortstops have. And then finished sixth in average with a 290 average, which is really impressive. And really just kind of speaks to how deep their shortstop position is there. But Perdomo eventually kind of ends up as the second best shortstop in 5x5 leagues in terms of Roto. He started in the nine hole in the first week of the season, then it got moved to the top of the order and just didn't stop producing. He was consistent every single month. He had like a little bit of a dip in August and September, but it really wasn't that bad of a dip either. So just really consistent numbers from him overall. And then I had to throw another pitcher in there, Matthew Boyd, an ADP of 323. Almost 180 innings this year, 31 games started. He had 14 wins on that Cubs team, 3.21 ERA, 1.09 WHIP, and 154 strikeouts. Really consistent throughout the season as well. He had 17 total quality starts. He only gave up more than three earned runs in seven starts in this season. Really good, just kind of bounce back year, I think, for Boyd. And even though the strikeout numbers aren't incredible, just the fact that he was available the entire season, finished as like a top 30 starting pitcher, is just really impressive for a guy that, just a couple years ago, we didn't know if he was ever going to really pitch again in the majors.
Yeah, awesome bounce back for Boyd. I definitely wish that I had him this year. I was interested in him last year. I believe he was on the Guardians and he came back in like August or September and had some nice starts. And I remember, picking him up for some streams down the stretch and he was on my radar coming into this draft season, but I guess just kind of slipped by. So bummed to miss out on him. And Perdomo, yeah, I mean, he might have been the biggest ADP value. I mean, he was a waiver ad in, most of the leagues that we play. Obviously, deeper leagues, he was maybe drafted, but I mean, he just had honestly a superstar season, like a seven WAR season, and the Diamondbacks have him on a 4-year, $45 million contract that starts next year. And so just a great bargain for them. And honestly, I mean, it might be a little crazy to say after 1 year, but like seems to be like an underrated superstar almost in terms of not necessarily fantasy, but just real life. He's an everyday shortstop, runs the bases well, and obviously can and now is really unlocking some stuff with the bat. So yeah, it's been quite the jump for him. Super cool to see.
Yeah, he just won't have the power as other elite shortstops. That probably just makes him maybe out of that top five conversation that we were having with Zach Neto. But nonetheless, the other stats are really good. Like a 290 average is definitely a really solid mark. It's maybe a little over what he's used to hitting. His career average is 253. So, you know, it's going to be debatable whether that stays or not. But if this Diamondbacks offense continues to be, you know, good year in, year out, you know, those runs and RBI numbers are going to continue being really solid.
Right, and I guess we'll see. Obviously, he's going to be close to the top of the lineup, but we'll just see, you know, where exactly he ends up to see if it's going to be more of a run or RBI-driven type profile. Yeah.
All right, next, maybe not an award that anyone wants to get, but biggest non-injury disappointment. I think both you and I had some different names on here. But, yeah, just, you know, generally wanted to avoid guys who are out for the entire season because of injury. So Yordan Alvarez, unfortunately, you are not eligible for this award. But I mean, sure, like guys picked up injuries here and there that kind of dealt to some of the demise of their season. So we let those guys in. But yeah, if you were out for season, obviously we weren't going to include you in this list. But yeah, Patrick, who did you have for kind of your disappointing player of the season?
Yeah, I went with some really highly drafted guys here. Obviously, you could have, you know, pitchers like Aaron Nola and Bailey Ober who really hurt your ratios and were drafted like just inside the top 100. But I went and set my sights a little higher here. The first one is Jackson Merrill. He was injured. I think he maybe had two IL stints this year, but he still played 115 games with 483 plate appearances, slash 264, 317, 457. So pretty pedestrian slash line with 59 runs, 16 homers, 67 RBIs, and the big one, only one steal. So he, you know, really didn't come close to earning that 26 ADP. He was, I think, outside the top 200 on most player raters. Obviously, the average and the steals took a big step back. The power, he kind of went in like a little power surge to end the year and salvage that aspect of it. But overall, a disappointing season. Obviously, he was great last year as a age 21 season, so he got pumped up the boards. Probably a little too much steam, unfortunately. Fell back to earth this year. He'll be a guy that's really tough to value next year, I think. I just, you know, it's hard to say if the speed's going to come back or not, just because he wasn't a burner in the minors. And also, you know, some of the injuries, I think, was making him less likely to run. So it's going to be a tough grade for the offseason. And then even more highly drafted Mookie Betts, obviously, at the Dodgers, ADP 15. He had 663 plate appearances with an even worse slash line, 258, 326, 406. Much better counting stats, though. 95 runs, 20 homers, 82 RBIs, and 8 steals. I think he was around like 80th or so in the player rater, so not a total dud, but not what you hoped for. Just the ratios were pretty poor, and the power was a little bit less. He had that weird illness in coming in the Japan series, so that could have been affecting him all year maybe. So maybe sort of an injury, but yeah, pretty disappointing season for Mookie for sure.
Yeah, for Merrill, and you know, we talked about it already, the lack of stolen bases is just going to be the part that I don't know how to evaluate, because, you know, he looked on track to be a consistent 2020 guy, and just doesn't look like that might be in his future anymore. Well, I mean, we'll have to see, but I feel hesitant to really draft Merrill next year unless he like drops to like the fifth or sixth round. Just because I don't think I want to invest a high enough pick in him. And I feel like there's still some helium around him, even with this poor of a season. But yeah, nonetheless, just a really big disappointment. And Mookie, yeah, just kind of, I wouldn't say it's start of decline. I think it could have just been a bad year for him. Obviously, the runs are still really solid at 95. You just kind of wish there was better in the, you know, better ratios for him. Only if, what is this, like a 732 OPS, right? Like that's just about league average. And you don't draft Mookie in like the end of the first round, beginning of the second round, to just be an average baseball player, right? And so I think that's what makes this disappointing, is that, you know, essentially he's like first or second round investment, and the returns he has are just kind of like, nah, they're nothing impressive.
Yeah, I think fortunately the Dodgers offense obviously offers him a spectacular floor, so I will be interested in the buy low depending on the price. And Merrill, I agree, I think I'm going to shy away. He just has one of those scary swing happy approaches that I am, you know, really reluctant to lean into. Like his 58% swing rate has got to be close to the top of the league. And obviously he still makes really hard contacts and all that, despite the swing happy approach. So I don't want to, you know, just dismiss it, because clearly he's got a great hit tool. and his barrel rate and stuff actually went up this year. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where the price settles, but I do think that it might be still a little too high for where I want to draft him.
Yeah, I went a little bit further down the draft board, but I'm going to talk about first O'Neill Cruz, ADP of 37. Every year I talk about O'Neill Cruz, so at some point I will quit him, but I don't know when. Maybe this is the year. He finished with 20 homers, 38 stolen bases, a 200 average, 62 runs, and 61 RBI. And really, other than that stolen base numbers, this felt like a frustrating year to have Cruz on your fantasy team. His strikeout rate went up from 30 to 32%, and that average dropped by nearly 60 points, which is insane. Also, being on the Pirates does not help your offensive stats at all. 62 runs, 61 RBIs. And yeah, that was just I would call it a bad season. I mean, 38 stolen bases is definitely impressive, but all the other numbers are just, just not numbers that you want to have for a guy that you invested like a third or fourth round pick on. The other guy I wanted to maybe mention is Yiner Diaz. I mean, he's a catcher, so I mean, how much can you expect? But he was the second catcher off the board by a pretty decent margin. 20 homers, 56 runs, 70 RBI, one stolen base, 256 average. And despite all that, he finished 8th in homers, 9 in runs, 9th in RBI, 13th in average among catchers with 300 plate appearances or more. Those numbers actually aren't that much worse than his 2024 season. They are lower, but they're not like it wasn't like he had an incredible year last year. But I think part of the challenge here is that I think we all kind of knew Cal Raleigh was good, and Cal Raleigh was like the fifth catcher off the board. Which I mean, like, logically it makes sense, right? There's guys like Wilson and William Contreras who, you know, have pretty good track records that probably would have been drafted in front of Cal. You know, Yiner Diaz has like an okay track record the last two seasons, but being the second catcher on the board and just providing like basically bottom 10, or maybe not bottom, yeah, like basically the worst catcher on a team in a one catcher league sort of value, it's just kind of unfortunate there. In terms of some honorable mentions, Gunnar Henderson, I mean, he did start the season hurt. But he really wasn't out that long, ended up as the ninth best shortstop. It was pretty much average across the board, except for the fact that he had stolen bases. Otherwise, not a very special season. And then Kyle Tucker, as I mentioned, he was kind of dealing with injury throughout the year. After a really strong start to the season, like, his slugging was above 500 for pretty much the entirety of the first half of the year up until July. It just wasn't the same in the second half of the year. Ended up only with, I think, 22 homers. And he had a really good stretch to start the season. Felt like he was a shoo-in for another 30-30 year. And then just kind of fell apart as kind of the injuries took their toll.
Yeah, I thought about including Gunnar too. He was like slightly higher drafted than Mookie and finished slightly higher. So I think the disappointment level was pretty similar. The steals were great, but the power drying up was really concerning. And then obviously the Orioles offense took a huge step back around him. And yeah, Yiner Diaz, he's a guy who always scares me. I mean, compared to Yiner Diaz, Jackson Merrill has a patient approach. I mean, Yiner Diaz literally swings at everything, and it's hard to believe in a catcher that swings at everything to maintain a good batting average. Like, I guess Salvi has done it for, you know, a few years in his prime, but it's hard for me to really have a lot of faith in. And O'Neill Cruz, yeah, really disappointing season. The Pirates, I mean, I think they were last in the league in home runs by like 30 or something, just an absolutely anemic offense. But at the same time, he seems like a guy that's always going to be drafted like close to the top 50. So I don't expect that to change too much. The power speed upside is still there, but it kind of seems like he's trending more in the direction of like a Luis Robert fantasy-wise, as opposed to like someone who's on the up and up like Tatis was or Ellie De La Cruz or somebody like that.
Yeah, I didn't include this in my worst pick or worst fantasy move of the year, but I traded Brent Rooker and Clay Holmes for O'Neill Cruz. And at first it felt like a terrible decision. And then it kind of worked out because Brent Rooker ended up not having a great year. And Clay Holmes, the Mets just didn't want to use him in an effective way for fantasy baseball. So I ended up trading like two ineffective players for one ineffective player. So, you know, kind of all worked out in the end. And I guess Cruz still was able to pitch in the stolen base category.
Yeah, that was the crazy thing is how much he was running, but it was kind of like you needed him to really return any value just because everything else was really rough.
Yeah. I mean, taking a step back, like Gunnar Henderson, right? So 17 homers, 30 stolen bases this year, 85 runs, 68 RBI. Obviously, all those numbers are lower than last year's numbers, except for stolen bases. Those went up by 9. Average kind of stayed around the same, 281 versus 274 this season. Like, where do you think you've got Gunnar next year? Is he a first-round talent, or are you going to wait on him a little bit, if you can even wait on him?
Yeah, I think maybe, like, pick 15. So, you know, like, the turn in a 15-team league or early second round in a 12-teamer. I don't think the power, you know, drop-off is completely real. I think that he's still a 30-homer bat, but he was flashing like he could be a 40-homer bat last year, so I don't know if that's quite in the tank anymore. But, yeah, I think that the 30-30 type potential is still there. So it's maybe, like, similar to a Lindor-type profile, but Lindor is just more stable. So I think that I would probably prefer someone like Lindor to Gunnar. And then, obviously, you have, like, Bobby Witt and Ellie still ahead of him at the shortstop position, too.
Yeah. Yeah, the hard hit rate was about the same, 54% versus 49%. Barrel rate did go down by 3%, so there's that kind of a bigger drop in terms of just total number of barrels. So, I don't know. It's an interesting thing for Gunnar. I'm curious what he looks like next season.
Right, he just doesn't elevate the ball a ton, like 10-degree launch angle, and he hits a significantly more ground balls than fly balls, so... Obviously, he hits the ball super hard, but how much of that's coming on the ground, right? So I don't think that he necessarily has the batted ball profile of a 40-homer hitter, but that doesn't mean he can't, you know, be a good bet for 25 to 30, you know, every prime season.
Yeah. All right. We are going to talk about the best or worst fantasy moves that we made this year. I was trying to prep for this, and I realized I didn't make that many moves, so... I made a lot of waiver wire moves, but, you know, all of those are like picking up streamers and stuff like that. So I don't have a great list of this, but Patrick, I think you've got some pretty interesting ones to shout out.
Yeah, I definitely have some good ones and one really bad one. So we'll start with the good. I wanted to put my Ben Rice fab in here. It's like week 2, I think, or so, but I ended up dropping him after a couple of months because my catchers were Cal Raleigh and Will Smith, and he was losing playing time. So it made sense at the moment, didn't end up making sense in the grand scheme of things, but can't give myself a lot of credit for that one. So I'm going to talk about two guys who were big down the stretch for me and my OC that cashed. One of them was Daniel Palencia. I got him for $21 unopposed on May 25th. I think it was right after he had gotten like his first or second save, and it looked like he was going to get the role. I think the Memorial Day weekend was doing me some favors here in terms of some people sitting out fab on the long weekend with no backup bid, so I'll take it. I had Edwin Diaz and Felix Bautista, but obviously Bautista ended up going out for the season, so being able to plug Palencia in was huge for gaining in saves. And after I got him, he threw 35 innings, 44 strikeouts, 3.34 ERA, and 20 saves. The ratio wasn't amazing, but one of those, I think it was his last outing before he went on the IL, he gave up like 5 earned runs and actually had him bench that week. So he was way better for my team than his overall numbers indicate. So huge save source. And then the other one was another OC fab move, which was Willy Adames. He got dropped in June and I added him on June 15th. It was an 83-6 bid. So I felt kind of silly at the time. I was like, am I just way higher on the bounce back here than everybody else? Or are people just, you know, not giving him the respect he deserved? And I think it ended up being the latter. He was, before I added him, 202, 286, 342 slash with only 8 homers and 3 steals. And then down the stretch, he was awesome. Just super well-rounded profile, 384 plate appearances, slash 244, 344, 485, 57 runs, 22 homers, 55 RBIs, and 9 steals. So aside from the batting average, he was just a super steady all categories contributor for me. And yeah, with between him and Zach Neto, I had my shortstop and MI spots just kind of locked down all year. So overspent on that one a little bit, but didn't end up feeling like an overspend based on the production there from Willie.
Yeah, definitely some solid pickups. I think Adames, we mentioned a little bit of a rough season for him first year in San Francisco. Right, average goes down by quite a bit. But the fact that you got to pick up the good part of his season worked out pretty well. He still ended up finishing with 30 homers this year. Didn't necessarily chip in as much in the steals department, but nonetheless, yeah, pretty solid numbers for him in that second half of the season.
Yeah, and I had him on my like shortstop preseason fades just because his ADP was inside the top 100, and I thought it was a little high. I think it was like 90, and he ended up finishing around 95th on the player rater. So you basically got, you know, what you wanted. It just kind of took a much different shape than you were expecting.
Right, you got to have the nice part of that yeah. season.
On the other end of the spectrum, though, I got the worst part of Nick Kurtz's season. So I dropped him on May 20th. It was after he had spent about a month in the majors, and it was in a keeper league. So he would have been a $10 keep for me this year. So that's just an extra punch to the gut. Before I cut him, he was striking out 36% of the time in 85 plate appearances, 208, 259, 299 slash with only one homer and no steals. And then we all know what happened after that. He 404 plate appearances, hit 309 with a 1.1 even OPS, 84 runs, 35 homers, 80 runs, and two steals. So just an incredible season, right? Runaway rookie of the year. The power came through basically immediately after I cut him. And I think he had a brief IL stint, but that did not slow him down. And yeah, I think, you know, this one I should have just been a little bit more patient, obviously. I was really monitoring, you know, his contact skills because that was the biggest thing that there was a concern about. And it just looked really bad. So I don't like to carry a lot of bench hitters in this format. And I had, you know, a couple of decent first base options. So it made sense to me at the time, but, you know, obviously it definitely came back to bite me. So might be a little more patient with the next rookie hitter that I have. But I think overall I was kind of looking at the right thing. So it's a tough one to swallow for sure.
Yeah, that's the one where I had a shot to pick him up, and I want to say it was like early June, and I was like, I don't know if I believe in it completely, and I didn't pull the trigger in one of my leagues. I did pull the trigger in the other league, which I'm pretty happy about that. That worked out fairly well. But Nick Kurtz one is the same way that I dealt with I think Tyler Soderstrom this year as well, because he started out the season really bad. And then I dropped him, and then I think he hit like 9 homers in a week or something stupid. I felt really dumb about that one, but yeah, Nick Kurtz, man, just what an incredible year for him. I don't know how high he's going to shoot up draft boards this upcoming season, but it feels like he's a lock to be, what, a top 3 round guy, probably?
Yeah, it's looking like second or third round. I mean, he's not going to hit 290 with a 31% strikeout rate again. Like, if he does that, then I guess he's like hits the ball as hard as Aaron Judge does. But I don't buy that part of the profile. But everything else could be incredible. He could push 40 homers in that ballpark, maybe even 45. Yeah. So it's going to be you're going to have to pay a pretty penny for him. That's for
sure. The A's are officially back in Sacramento next year, which is that's going to be fun for anyone who has, you know, the young offensive players of the Athletics. I have just two bad moves. I guess my one good move was that I really trusted in Taylor Ward, and it worked out really well for me. And I will always be a Taylor Ward stan, and he always just does well enough to make it worth your while drafting him. But I missed out on Byron Buxton on the waiver wire. And this was like, you know, as a Twins fan, I think there's just like, I don't know if it's being a Twins fan or just being a baseball fan in general, like you just tend to look down on your own team's guys a little bit more. I really know the you know, the secret sauce behind this. I know he's not that good. But yeah, I really had a opportunity to pick him up. I think it was in like early May in my home league. And I just couldn't pull the trigger on it. Granted, at the time, my outfielders, were Aaron Judge, Kyle Tucker, and Taylor Ward. So I was like, I don't need a fourth outfielder. I don't need that, but you know, still have a util spot, right? Like, it's still filled out with someone. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't think I had the need at that point. But honestly, sometimes with baseball, like, it really doesn't matter what your roster need is, right? Like, if you have a guy you want to pick up and you believe in the you know, the process, like, just pick him up. You'll find a spot for him on your roster. And it was a daily league too, so like, I could have easily found a place to start Buxton. So that was unfortunate. And then the other one was maybe holding on to Zach Wheeler in Dynasty. Like, that was one of the ones where you just wouldn't see it coming, right? He still had a really great season this year. Unfortunately, now is going to be dealing with thoracic outlet syndrome. But Zach Wheeler was also one of those guys where, you know, the writing was on the wall in terms of, like, retirement, right? I think he already said he was only going to plan to play, you know, two more seasons. And, you know, I really, the idea of, like, having, you know, really good season from Wheeler, like, he was just lights out, a top 10 pitcher for a pretty much the entire season that he was healthy. And so in the end, like, it wasn't necessarily a bad move, but I think just with dynasty baseball in general, like, sometimes you just have to be willing to, you know, take the current sacrifice, so to speak, or you take the hit early in order to kind of, you know, succeed late. And, you know, not trading Zach Wheeler for, you know, some potential future prospect or really just some young pitcher who's like maybe a top 20 guy right now. Not taking advantage of that hurt just a little bit.
Yeah, it's always tough. I mean, I even have a tough time in keeper leagues, you know, valuing present versus future value. So I can't imagine doing it in Dynasty. It's even more challenging. And yeah, once he comes out and says like how long his career is going to be, you're like, dude, come on. Like, we're in a day and age where, you know, Clayton Kershaw, Justin Verlander, and Max Scherzer especially are pitching, you know, past 40, right? So you can maybe sell him to an owner like, oh, he could pitch for like four more years. Yep. But now, you know, there's no ambiguity about it. So his value is kind of set in stone at this point. You're a little bit, your hands are tied.
Yeah. I would say other poor moves that I made in the offseason on this fantasy team were also trading both Shea Langeliers and Tyler Soderstrom away. Like, granted, I think it ended up working out for me with the guys that I got back. But, man, missing out on the seasons from those two guys kind of hurt after really, like, holding on to them for, you know, a good chunk of their rookie – or not their rookie, but kind of their development years in Oakland.
Yeah, I think that those kind of things in Dynasty, like, those might just drive me crazy. You know, like, the mistakes come back to bite you for years and years to come.
Although trading away Jordan Lawler apparently was the right move to make. So there's that.
Not done yet.
Exactly. yeah. Any other fun moves that you want to mention that you made this season?
Yeah, I had one that I guess was like a big win and it became a big win after it was a big loss. I think it was like late April or early May. I traded George Springer for Matthew Liberatore because Springer was good, but then he hit a slump and Liberatore was locked in. And then Liberatore had a good month or two and then really struggled and I ended up dropping him. But so the guy I traded Springer to dropped him after he, you know, hit a slump and I added him back and he was probably my best hitter besides Cal Raleigh. So, you know, made the wrong move at first, but, you know, wasn't too proud to go back and add the guy that I traded away. So it ended up working out really well.
Yeah. The best part is when you add a guy that you traded away, like that feels fun. Like he's like, oh, he actually like is good now. You know, I got the maximum value out of him. I got a player and I got him. So that's always a fun thing to do in fantasy baseball. All right, well, those are kind of just the wrap-ups for the fantasy season. Just kind of a recap. We both had Aaron Judge as our best hitter. I had Garrett Crochet as the best pitcher. Patrick had Dirk Skubal. In terms of best reliever, we both kind of settled on Aroldis Chapman, kind of absolutely dominating this year from the reliever spot. Best late-round pick, I don't think either of us necessarily choose a specific player, but I think all the guys we suggested were really solid. Eovaldi, Byron Buxton, Zach Neto, Springer, Perdomo, Matthew Boyd, specifically those two shortstops, Neto and Perdomo, that could be really interesting to follow next season. Both are young guys who could definitely contribute for years to come. Biggest non-injury disappointment, Patrick had Jackson Merrill. I probably settled on O'Neill Cruz, who I will inevitably find on one of my fantasy teams next year because I can't quit him. And then, yeah, fantasy moves of the year, honestly, like if you just make good ones, that's a win in and of itself. So, no particular great, you know, outstanding moves, but some really solid moves there for sure. So yeah, that kind of wraps it up for the regular season. Patrick, I know we've got postseason baseball. I believe the Cubs just punched their ticket to the, NLDS. They're going to face, the Brewers, I believe. Red Sox Yankees is going on right now.
Yeah, it should be a fun, you know, we got the fun divisional games in this first round, and then we'll get the, you know, the heavyweights in action next week. So it's going to be, you know, the Dodgers seem to be firing on all cylinders, and I know the Mariners are a really hot pick, but the Phillies obviously have a ton of postseason experience. So I think it'll be a fun few weeks and just enjoying baseball without the fantasy ramifications. I know those postseason contests are out there and I was tempted to sign up, but I resisted. So I'll just be watching as a baseball
fan. Yeah. The, Roki Sasaki closer conversation is a real fun one to have right now. Cause that splitter looked, gross yesterday. I was like, how is that not like categorized as a curveball? But that thing is just, the drop on that's nuts.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
Well, anyways, hopefully you are also enjoying the postseason. I'm not sure when we'll be back for our next episode. We are going to have off-season episodes, but yeah, the podcast schedule is going to be a little bit of a flux as we kind of settle into the off-season. But you can find any sort of updates for us on our Twitter at ThisWeekPL. If you have any comments or questions, send them to us at our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnCut. You can find Patrick at PFitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Leave a five-star review if you enjoy the show. And lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Pro. By doing so, you can join us in the Discord, get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. Obviously, a lot of postseason talk going on right now in the Discord, but going to be plenty of off-season talk as well. We're going to be doing mock drafts throughout the off-season, so definitely check in on those as that content comes out. But yeah, that is going to be all for this season of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. We'll be back sometime in the next month or so, I'm sure, with another episode of the podcast. But for Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.